local, national and international affairs, plus some goss and scandal. You're listening to Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
And it's a very good morning to Jennifer Cromarty, who's come in from the Committee for Geelong. Jennifer, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, it's been a while. I've really missed it, Mitchell.
I know. I think you're unwell a couple of weeks. Did you recover?
Yeah, it's on my back. I had a problem with my back, so I was in bed
for a while.
Wasn't
the flu? Because we were talking earlier this morning with the breakfast people about people that have had the flu shot and have then had cold-like symptoms for a few days afterwards.
Yeah, I don't do the flu shot.
No,
I don't know
neither
if I should, but... No, this is just a back issue. So, no, I'm up and about and probably around 70% now. So it's good to be back.
Good to see you back on deck. Well, the election result. And I suppose the question is, what does it mean for our region? Because Corangamite has been a government-held seat since 1996. Mm-hmm. So now it goes back to being an opposition seat. I'm pretty sure the best result I can get for Sarah Henderson is finishing up 800 votes behind, and that's if everything goes her way. So I don't think she can win. I think Libby Coker has taken that seat. But what does that mean?
Look, it's an interesting situation for this region because obviously we've got quite a big Labor then stronghold surrounding us with Corio and Corangamite. And you've got Wannon kind of on the fringes. But from an advocacy point of view for community, I think it's really important that we forge and continue to forge those relationships with the government, which is obviously a coalition government. And I've already had a quick chat with a Victorian Liberal senator just to kind of see how things are all shaping up from their point of view as well. So I think it'll be about how can we make sure that we engage. We've obviously got potentially how the cabinet is formed, but Frydenberg assumedly will be treasurer and he's a Victorian. So I think it's about how can we make sure Geelong's voice is heard over the next 3 to 4 years. I mean, notwithstanding we've got a Labor state government, so it just has lots of different challenges around everything, as we've seen through the city deal and other things that we've navigated over the last period. But yeah, without a strong voice saying Corangamite from a sitting member in a government, it does lay ahead a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I'd be interested in what that particular Victorian Liberal senator had to say, because who is our sort of senator representative person? Because usually they allocate certain seats to a senator, but that might give away who it was. But,
well, it was just more that it just occurred to me that, you know, we do need to probably, and I've seen some senators come here over the last year, and I thought it might be quite timely. I've only been in the job for about 3 or 4 months, and I thought it might be quite timely just to re-engage and then just think about what we can do to actually have that voice. And I think people do forget about things like senators who do have roving briefs, and a lot of them sit on pretty significant parliamentary committees that can be very influential federally. So I think it's about that, but it's also about, you know, how do we have direct access to Canberra and maybe advocate. And I'm actually going to be catching up with Lane Carbines today, so we'll have a bit of a chat about what that means and what we might do in the next 3 years collectively.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting time because people are, I suppose, now thinking, well, what happens from here? Because we've got, you know, fast rail monies, we've got swimming pool monies, $26,500 per voter in Corangamite was what the numbers were crunched as. So will all that get delivered if there's no Liberal representative in Corangamite? You have to say the government would honour its promises.
You'd think so. I mean, I'd be looking at the fine print. I would say that the rail stuff is regionally significant regardless. Yeah. I mean, they're looking at saying we need to do something around fast rail. But I think some of the smaller announcements, whether they were pending a Corangamite win, might be something to look at. But it is an interesting situation when government makes promises to a particular electorate, lose that particular seat potentially, but form government. What does it actually mean?
It's like when the government makes promises in a by-election to try and win it back from the opposition, but obviously they're still in government afterwards and the opposite, like, doesn't actually change anything. So what happens from there? So it's a similar situation, but yeah, I think Libby Coker would be frustrated the fact that she's probably won the seat but doesn't get that government power behind
her. No one won't be able to deliver on her promises. All she can do is advocate on behalf of her community. Exactly right. So she'll just try and get a voice to government, but obviously it's a bit difficult when you're not in the same party.
So I made about 5 points at the start of the program about the whole thing, but I suppose the question is, did Morrison win it or did Shorten lose it?
Look, I actually think if you look at the results, it's almost status quo. I mean, Queensland was really interesting, obviously, and people keep talking about it, but Tasmania and WA also were probably not what the Labor Party were hoping for. So I think there's a couple of things. One is that when you actually look at how people vote, I think we've talked about this before, Mitchell, people don't get obsessed to probably the level you and I do around specific policies and unpacking exactly what it might mean to the economy, both locally and nationally. And they'll think about, do we think this person is a decent kind of person that we can relate to? Do we think that this person has values that we can absolutely understand? It doesn't mean they agree, but that they can go, I understand what they stand for. And I think, and this is something I've been tossing around over the weekend, is that you're hearing a lot about how potentially people didn't like or trust Bill Shorten for whatever reason. There's been some histories there that might, you know, play on people's minds. But Scott Morrison somehow has come through a period where we've had three now prime ministers in three terms of government from the same party, and yet they didn't seem to have the baggage that the Labor Party did when they had the Rudd-Gillard-Rudd thing. And know that Bill Shorten were heavily involved in that period. What I'd look at and say, I think Scott Morrison kept his message very simple. They didn't take a lot of really massive change policies to the election. I mean, they did present a budget in April that I thought was pretty well balanced. I wrote an analysis about that. But what Shorten and particularly Chris Bowen did as Treasurer is put forward a really transformative budget, which had things that were quite controversial in some people's minds, you know, everything from the franking credits to the negative gearing changes. So I think when you're coming from opposition, the big lesson we're hearing is people were having, looking back to the Hewson election, which was that unlosable election where he took a comprehensive and very, very complicated tax package to the electorate, and they just said, well, we're not sure we're going to, number one, give you government and then have you transform everything immediately. So I think lessons there, but also lessons around polling. And I think the pollsters are really, you know, scratching their heads as to what actually happened. They said it's unprecedented. So when you said, is it actually an election that ScoMo won or Bill Shorten lost, I think it's lessons around how do you actually articulate your policy position to the electorate and how do you come across as a human being. And I think Scott Morrison has been quite open and, you know, that sort of person that people go, look, I think, you know, I mightn't agree with everything he says, but at least we know where he stands, and he kept it simple.
Poland got it right in 07, 10, 13, 16. So why suddenly are the polls wrong now?
And I'm not a pollster, but do they do mainly their polls by landlines?
Well, they said that they're changing it now and going back to more mobiles because they've realised that most people don't answer my landline.
No. And so you look at it and you go, well, what demographic are they actually targeting if they're still doing landlines? Equally, I think it's about, I don't know whether the right questions were being asked or whether things shifted really dramatically, but there was a poll, was it the Ipsos one that came out very late that was actually probably the tightest. And I just wonder how much they're doing in specific seats as opposed to general vote and whether they were, I believe I heard some internal polling was picking up some of this on both sides, whether it was being adhered to or not, I don't know. But no, it's one of those things where it's who are they asking, when are they asking them and how are they asking them?
Someone just pointed out to me by message that Richard Di Natale on Q&A last Monday said, well, basically, the Greens are just about home in Higgins. He had some internal polling or some galaxy polling that said, you know, they've done very, very well and they're going to come over the line and the Liberal vote has absolutely collapsed. That's what he said. So those internal Greens polls are obviously wrong.
But I think it's also, if you think about it, I mean, when you, there's a lot of people who probably wouldn't either bother or want to answer polls, but equally some of them might just say whatever they want at the time. And I sort of think that, I think that's interesting if you think about the psyche of Australians, you know, kind of playing the Mickey a little bit. But look, that may not be the case. But I also heard quite a lot about the Liberal Party using the tele town hall technology. Now, I know they were using that the election before. This is not new. I mean, I was in Corangamite last election and there was a tele town hall to my home phone the last election.
Yeah.
So this is not new technology. For them to say, oh, there's something really brand new that the Liberal Party are doing, this has been at least 6 years.
I think that's a very good point to make. You know, everyone
it's not a secret.
Everyone uses the sort of same technology, don't they?
Well, really? This was, I don't know, it was the one where you get a call and you're invited to participate in a discussion and ask questions.
I've heard about
it was
that.
Pretty, you know, interesting at the time. And I actually just sat my phone on speakerphone and let it go all night. And I just sat and listened while I was watching television. But I'm just surprised that there seemed to be this thing that suddenly there was this new piece of technology that maybe it engaged the electorate the Labor Party weren't aware of. But
something I was talking to Simon Ramsay about last week was, Mm. He said that the polls showed that 17% of the population were undecided. And I said, if you haven't made up your mind by then, like, when are you going to make up your mind? I think that's just absolutely ridiculous. So maybe people were secretly going to vote coalition but didn't want to say, so they said we're undecided.
Well, this was the comment that the Prime Minister made about the quiet Australians. And look, I'm not going to buy into this too much, but, you know, you look at the response on social media about people's dismay, because obviously many people were thinking it would be a Labor government for a whole range of issues that they were really passionate about supporting. But I don't like the vitriol that comes out where people don't, and I say this with great respect, look at the way our democracy is structured. For people to be maligning Queenslanders, I lived there for 9 years.
Well, John Aaron, through the incidentally, state. Sort of in a roundabout way, just back then said Queenslanders got fooled.
Right. Well, let me put it to you this way. They've got a Labor state government.
Mm.
So I'm not quite sure how we can say Queenslanders are fooled or not. But I think there were obviously some issues that resonated with them. They are very fiercely independent thinkers in Queensland, and Southeast Queensland is also very different to North Queensland. And having lived now, I was born in New South Wales, I've lived most of my life in Victoria but spent almost a decade in Queensland. You need to treat our country almost like separate mini cultural
yep.
outposts, and you need to really think about your strategy there. So I think we need to be really, really careful that we think about our democracy as a whole and as a political party that you have your strategies accordingly. Very difficult on a federal sphere because there are so many things that affect so many different people. But I think we need to be respectful. I think we need to be so pleased that we live in a democracy where you can line up and not only not get harassed or shot, but we can actually have our, you know, little sausages, or someone called about the democracy dumplings I saw on the weekend. Mm. So it's a really fantastic experience to go out there and vote for your country.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, and we do at times take it for granted, but it's very powerful. I just wish they'd make the actual place where you fill out your ballot paper a bit wider, because you can't see whole Senate paper at the same time, and it just becomes ridiculous trying to fill out squares and move it all around. That'd be my only critique of the whole process, but the AEC people were doing a great job. I actually went to the Belmont pre-poll because I was going to be out of the electorate on Saturday, so I went to the Belmont pre-poll on Friday, and it was really, really good to talk to all the people there, and I was waiting in line like everyone else, and Lisa Neville came up and said hello, but didn't offer me a Labor How to Vote card. Oh. Lisa, come on. And I spoke to Damien Cole, and he was very proud of what he'd achieved about some of the drilling prospects, and Sarah Henderson was there, and Animal Justice Party was there. So it was a great atmosphere in Belmont on Friday, I have to say.
Yeah, I don't do pre-poll, but that's just me. And actually, I was interested that there were lines at pre-poll. I thought, isn't the point of pre-poll to maybe avoid it? And I found on Saturday, no wait at all.
Mm.
It was very, very easy in and out, and I thought, you know, much better use of my time, at least during my working week.
Some of the booths we were driving past on Saturday, none of them had queues at all.
No.
And it was really interesting to see.
It is. So I think there's a bit of a discussion there about, you know, the nature of having a day where we make a decision and how that affects people's campaigning and, you know, things that might happen the day before an election that could be quite important for people in terms of their vote, but far be it from me to tell people what to do.
And do you think some of the activists have to have a think about their approach now? Like, our very good friends at the Sustainable Hour said this was going to be the climate election, and I said it may be on there, but it's fifth, maybe sixth, seventh in people's list of priorities. Economy is definitely number one, and I think that's really, really important to note. But I've got a lot of respect for them and what they do and what they're trying to do, but maybe they've got to take a step back and think, okay, how do we try and persuade people that what we're saying is right?
Yeah, look, I'll say a bit about this because I've probably said in the past I'm not really an energy policy expert, but I'm now being persuaded to look into it a bit more. So I sit on Future Proofing Geelong, so I know I'll have a meeting coming up. But I look at it and think the coalition did have a national energy guarantee policy that I thought was pretty well thought out, and then obviously got rejected by the party. But
I don't really know what their policy is now in terms of energy.
You know, and I would probably think it might be worthwhile having a look at that again. Tony Abbott's gone. I think that Scott Morrison has a bit of a clean sheet. I think he said he's not going to go revisit it, so, you know, we'll see. But I know that the Labor Party did give that policy support. So if we're actually going to have something, which is a policy that has taken down now how many prime ministers? Is it five, six? All the way back to Turnbull Abbott, then Gillard gone. Yeah, all around ETS and carbon tax. And I think if Scott Morrison, and I would throw this out as something to consider to the prime minister, if he could revisit that policy and say, look, you know, we were very close. Why don't we just see how we go again? Whether that would be something he could take as some political capital into this election, next election, I don't know. But I think we do need to have some resolution. And from a business perspective, what people need in Australia is just certainty of policy, regardless of how you feel about it. If you have policy certainty, you can make investments. That is the biggest issue, I think, in terms of climate change policies or things we need to do, is we need some certainty. Business will then invest accordingly. And I think business is relatively agnostic in some ways in terms of this. Yes. They just want to know. And farmers, having sat and met with a lot of people in the agricultural sector, they're very pro doing something in this space too. So, again, the National Party should look at this and I think really support something happening before the next budget.
Well, thank you very much for coming in. Do you want to have the final word before we let you go?
Yeah, I think it's just thinking about now. I think we started with this saying that, you know, we potentially are going to be sitting here surrounded by, you know, federal Labor seats and also quite strongly state Labor as well now with South Bowen in Labor Party state hands. And, you know, how do we as a community listen to all voices? And I think that we've got some great local members who do that. And I think it'll be a real challenge. And the Committee for Geelong, particularly because we're not government funded and we're not an arm of government and we do have the ear of, you know, quite a diverse voice here, is how do we now strategically position ourselves to make sure that the federal government doesn't, I don't think they'll forget about us, but certainly not forget us when there are big decisions to be made. So I'd say any advice on that front would be appreciated, but we'll start working on that now.
Keep up the work. It's very, very important.
It is. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming into the studio.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.